All right, welcome back to another edition episode. I never really know what to call it. Welcome back to another edition of the Sunstone Podcast. I'm your host, John Larson, and I'm here today at the Sunstone Studios with everybody's favorite agitator, Lindsay Hansen Park.
Lindsay. Hello.
Welcome.
First of all, the Sunstone Podcast Room is looking awesome. It's coming along nicely, even though we don't have a sponsor.
Oh, are we looking for a sponsor?
I think we should be looking for a sponsor.
Yeah, the room can be sponsored. You can contact Sunstone if you want to find out how much that's going to be. It's reasonable, I'm sure.
We're going to let you put your little handprints in some plaster and we'll put it on the wall.
We do also need a computer. I'm just putting that out there because we're using an old computer of mine. Actually, the old Whitefields computer that was 6 or 7 or 8 years old.
We could crowdfund to get John Larson a laptop. Do you think that would go well on the internet?
I don't want a laptop. What we need is a studio computer that's sitting here. We're going to do a campaign sooner or later. But if you, dear listener, want to contribute to us in a totally tax deductible way, you could buy us a computer.
Also, a case of Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Getting greedy.
Lindsay came in here drinking the Diet Coke out of the refrigerator. You said it expired in what, 2017?
You guys, this is how sad. This is why Sunstone needs your support. In our refrigerator, this is no shade to our office managers who are great. I come in to get Diet Coke, and the first one I opened was from September 2017. And that's like almost 2 years old. And then I was like, oh, I'll get the bottle. And the bottle is worse. I'm pretty sure the bottle is fermented.
There's certain problems with this narrative. First of all, you drink like 10 bottles of Diet Coke every day. How did this happen?
I don't know. I feel like
the refrigerator's not that big.
I feel like I've been set up. Like someone's like, we're going to pull a prank on Lindsay Park.
Like they found a box of them downstairs somewhere or something?
Yeah, this other one's a relic. I swear someone's making Diet Coke wine.
I don't think there's anything in there that can actually ferment. Matter of fact, I don't think there's any food in there at all.
I'm pretty sure that Diet Coke wine would be like the celestial kingdom of sacrament
wines. Oh my gosh, that sounds awful. Diet Coke wine.
Well, it was. Well, just so we're clear.
So, well, let's talk about why we're here and then we can go forward. Back in the day, back when I did the Mormon Expression podcast, about every 6 months, we would take a pause, we would take a breather and have a podcast about the podcast and talk about what we were thinking, what we were doing, what worked and what didn't work, and just kind of let people appear behind the scenes. If that doesn't interest you, then you can go ahead and skip and wait till next week. But, this has been a very interesting project, and I don't think it's turned out exactly as either of us assumed it would when we started talking about this back in the fall. When we say, what is Sunstone trying to be as it tries to be More Than One Ways to Mormon, when a lot of these groups are their whole point, I mean, this is one of the Achilles' heels of the Restoration Movement, their whole point is to win the Battle Royale and be the one authority figure.
Right.
So when you're engaging in a space where that is what everybody has been programmed to, either they're doing it religiously or they've been shown that they've been told since they were a little kid, there's one true truth, there's one true church, there's one true people. And oftentimes that mindset moves from one thing to the other, to the other, to the other, because that's the way we were conditioned.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've termed that faith politics because we talked about this at the beginning, like Sunstone felt like it took a risk to bring you on. You felt like you took a risk to take us on because we both are seen as identifying with certain camps of people, right?
Right.
Like Sunstone's more middle way. You were seen as ex-Mormon. And so both groups sort of responded to, oh no, John Larson's going to come on the podcast. And it's so interesting because first of all, there's no, like, you have this public persona that people think that they know you and they know your identity based on what you say. One of the things that I have seen with this podcast, I've coined the term faith politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I think I've talked about when I came to Sunstone, people were like, oh, you know, Sunstone used to be so great, but now it's too anti-Mormon and you need to bring in more faithful voices. And I thought, well, that's easy. Why aren't we inviting them? Let's go invite them. And then I went to all of these spaces, like had a ton of lunches down at BYU with amazing academics and professors and said, we need these ideas at Sunstone. What can we do? And people would say, you're great. We love you. We love Sunstone. I'm a subscriber. I come to the conference. I can't present. And you know, people don't realize that still BYU professors are not allowed to publish in Sunstone or Dialogue, or they won't get hired.
Right.
And so that's the challenge that we come into in Sunstone, at this space. Like, people say they want you to be this or they want you to be that. And when we brought you on, John, we got that feedback too. Oh no, Sunstone's going to head more anti-Mormon, more ex-Mormon. But you got that same feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I get it a little bit different, but, and we'll talk about the negative feedback I get versus the negative feedback Sunstone gets. But what people don't realize behind the scenes is it takes a lot of work. I would guess for every one of these podcasts, it takes probably 3 hours of somebody's time. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, 180 minutes to talk to people, bring them on. And we actually spend quite a bit of time reaching out to faithful voices. And one of the challenges we have, and by the way, this is by design. The church has done this on purpose. They know exactly what they're doing. Because you have a voice, you have a place like Sunstone where we want all voices represented. On this podcast, on others, we want all of these faithful people. And both Lindsay and I spend a lot of time reaching out to people who are more faithful voices. And the answer I get oftentimes is, we like what you're doing. We like the podcast. We like the magazine. We wish we could, but we can't. Because if you are employed by the church, and I'm telling you this from experience, and this goes way back to the Mormon Expression days, I never had a bias. I wanted the faithful people to come on. So I've literally reached out to, well over 100 faithful people, and almost to a person, they will refuse to come on. And they will refuse to engage, partly because they don't want that. And then sometimes their position rhetorically is not that strong once they get out of their bulwarks and their walls and their castle. And they don't want to have to defend some things that if they just say in church, nobody says boo. But so we have that. They don't want to take the risk of getting in trouble, both figuratively and literally, with their employers.
So I'm not an academic, but I've been, you know, in and around academics and in the academy and seen how people function. And it's been interesting because reputation there is like, it's worse than a high school, you know, social hierarchy. People are so concerned about that because it has to, which for good reason, you know, people's credibility as scholars is important, but it plays out in a different way in Mormon studies, particularly where people are afraid to be seen as too critical of the church, right? And so you'll have these historians, for example, who are pulling out these facts, these historical records, and they're worried that if they publish them in a certain way or with certain groups or have certain people talk about it, then it's going to marginalize their work. And I just think that's insane.
Well, it's not insane on their part. When we look at how the church over the past few years has bullied and controlled all of the chairs, as you know, Claremont and UVU and Weber State and University of Utah, the church gets heavily involved in choosing who's there. And they what they'll do is they'll have somebody, or the church themselves will promise a bunch of money. And then if they float a name who's not approved by whoever it is who's approving, they pull back. I know this from firsthand experience talking to these folks.
But already, I think that could affect the quality of scholarship, the integrity of scholarship.
It absolutely does. And this is the problem. I've had this conversation with Mormon scholars who don't want to publish that, you know, like they might be a geography professor, but they've done some interesting work in like Mormon theology. They do not want to publish it because they don't want to get beat up by their secular friends. It's like this double-edged sword. The church will go after them if they say anything wrong. And if they don't apply the same academic rigor to the church, then their peers will go after them. But the publications like FAIR, and they do not follow, you don't have to look very far to see, they don't follow the normal rigorous standards of, you know, logic and reason and historicity and that sort of stuff, because they basically argue backwards from a conclusion. That's no secret. You know, if it's a Mormon history publication, then it has to be assumed that you're going to arrive at the conclusion the church wants you to, or they're not going to publish it. That's not a criticism. That's an absolute truth.
No, it is true. And I'll tell you some evidence for it. So Brian Buchanan and I are doing this history podcast, which is amazing. You should check it out. It's really fun. And first of all, we had Mike Quinn on it, and he talked about the same thing that happened to him with donors, and his academic career was impacted by his scholarship and what he produced, and not because the quality was bad, but because the quality was good, and because it told things that the church didn't like. I mean, that's what happened to him. But Brian and I, we're working on this upcoming episode that's coming out next week, and we were looking at the way that Mormon scholars and historians and non-Mormon historians have talked about Joseph Smith, the women in Joseph Smith's life. And one of the virtues that they always attribute to Emma is that she, quote, stood by her man.
Right.
And I'm going to write this paper, Stand by Your Man, and how this rhetoric in the church, as if that was a value, as if it were a virtue, rather than looking at it more objectively, like how did Emma, quote, standing by her man impact her and all this stuff. And we were just sort of appalled. We started doing a search, and I'm talking legit, credible people continue to talk about the history in this way, that the women somehow retain their virtue or integrity or humanity by standing by Joseph Smith, for better or for worse. And I just thought, right there is an inherent bias in the way that we sort of venerate Joseph Smith still, rather than take a scholarly approach.
Well, and I agree with that. And it gets even more complicated when you start recognizing things that can't be said in either camp. One of them is, you cannot make an argument in any in any of these circles that polygamist wives in the 19th century liked it. Like, if you were to make that case, because the church's stand has always been, they did it out of duty, they had a confirmation of it, they, you know, blah, 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 blah. But there's very seldom a narrative that said, you know, I was so hot for Joseph Smith, I was perfectly happy to be his 20th wife. And, you know, I know I only got to see him once every other week, but man, that night was magic. You'll never hear that, except if you read the journals and writings, you'll see people saying stuff like that. And of course, ex-Mormons are notorious for commodifying the polygamous wives. They talk about them as property. They'll say this, you know, Joseph Smith stole other men's wives. Everything about that construction is terrible.
They'll use those stories to weaponize their agenda, which is to say that, like, I hate seeing Helen Mar Kimball used to beat up religion because someone is angry, and I get it, but like, do we always have to focus on Helen Mar's entire identity now becomes the fact that she's the shy 15-year-old bride. And whatever, if that resonates with you, but it's just so degrading to the history.
She can have no positive identity. She's become historically a pawn.
Yes.
That she has to be a victim. And if anything would come forth saying, no, she chose this. Oh, she can't choose it. And then we start ripping the agency away from these women. I've had this argument saying, this was a, you know, here's a woman that Joseph Smith married. She was 45. She'd been married before. She spoke positively about it afterwards. She took a lot of identity from being, oh, well, she was just a victim. We completely erase agency from these women. And we're using this again as an example. I mean, that's a topic for a whole nother day. But to say that there's these currents that we at Sunstone and on this podcast in particular are fighting against because these things are very politicized.
So can I talk about another one? And this is more about me personally, but I talked about how I'm not an academic, and yet Sunstone is a sort of partially academic space. And when I first came to it, there was this push to make Sunstone academic, or people that believe that it was an academic space. And I had talked to all of these academics and they're like, no, not Sunstone. But when I got hired, because I'm not an academic, and you know, because I say like when I talk words wrong, and because I'm just a girl and I'm a little bit ditzy or whatever, I got so much, and I still, that's a criticism from, I think, people that somehow see that as a threat to this institution. And I thought, I didn't do that. That was long ago. I mean, that's our strength, though. The fact that we can engage academics and have good, amazing scholarship show up and represent Sunstone. I mean, our magazine editor has like 2 PhDs. Like,
right.
Stephen Carter is amazing. And yet we also have the flexibility to do art and poetry and music and satire and all of these things and narratives. And I think that is one of the reasons we can do things that a lot of, I think, academic spaces can't.
Well, I think this is a byproduct, a negative byproduct of our culture. That, and when I say our culture, I'm talking about ex-Mormons and Mormons and progressive Mormons, that we love archetypes and we love individuals to fit into archetypes. And what Sunstone fundamentally is doing and trying to do is break those down, but there is an enormous amount of resistance. When you tell ex-Mormons, what about Sherry Dew? They just get angry that they even have to deal with her. That here's a woman who clearly has a lot of influence with the brethren, who clearly demonstrates some quote-unquote patriarchal aspects, and she's not very well pigeonholed. But so people just don't like her because they don't like the fact that she breaks the paradigm of that all women, that they love the keep sweet sort of pastel Relief Society presidents, that they, the General Relief Society presidency, that they can make fun of. But when you show strong Mormon women who break that paradigm, that they sometimes just get mad at you for even bringing it up.
You know, I had a similar experience where I felt challenged because I consider myself a feminist, and you know, I have spoken out and written for years about the patriarchal influences and the negative impact that it's had on our culture. But then I go down to Short Creek and I deal with men who have come out of that, who called themselves patriarch, and yet they come into this space where they're on the internet now and they come on my wall and they say something that is racist or homophobic or sexist, and they don't even know it, right? And, you know, my instinct is to be like, how can you not know it? Like, you're benefiting from it. But I'm dealing with a group who literally didn't have the internet or access to secular books, or all they had was racist Mormon doctrine that formed their minds. And it's been such a challenge because my wall have friends of color who have to deal with that all day long and have to read that, and to have them interact in this space without each other getting to see the struggles. And that's what Sunstone gets to do, because you get to show up in person. Some Mormon identities are so radically different, and we just assume that they are. But in person, you get to meet and look people in the eye and maybe understand that they're real and that their pain is real.
Right. Yeah, I think that you're exactly right. That's always been the strength of Sunstone. The benefit of Sunstone is you get to see these people, be they fundamentalists, be they progressive Mormons, be they believing Mormons, ex-Mormons, they're people, and they're genuine. And you can see that when you talk to somebody directly. You can see it in their eyes. You can see, and of course, I'm no fan of social media at all, and because I think it brings out the very worst in us. And that starts to affect those of us, and I'm talking about all across the podcast world and all across the nonprofits and people, that so many people want to drive us all into these archetypes. And you know, this is where we were referencing before the negative feedback, like say Sunstone gets on my podcast. The negative feedback that I get directly at me is there's a whole grundle of ex-Mormons who are really angry at me right now.
Yeah, because it's not angry enough, right?
Because I'm not angry enough.
Well, I mean, so that's interesting, because I think that, I mean, it's so hard because I want to say, in some ways, we can't have it both ways, because I want to be like, no, guys, the people that were worried that we were too ex-Mormon and, you know, we can't make them happy, and the people that were too ex-Mormon and think you're too faithful, we can't make them happy. But maybe that means that we're making people uncomfortable. The problem, which I would say is normally good, but the problem is, to put out content, you are limited by Sunstone's values, right?
I think Sunstone has some very specific values that people who've engaged Sunstone get. Once you go out to the conference, you get it. But when we start getting into like which groups we honor their narrative and which ones we don't, which groups we support, which bears we don't poke, you know, which hornet's nest we just leave alone. That's what I mean by the values. And those are some tricky, tricky questions.
Yeah, like who do you give a platform to, right? I've had, I'll just give this as an example. The opportunity to invite a very prominent white supremacist had contacted me and reached out and said, you know, I actually have a Mormon background. And I don't know what to do with that one, right? I honestly don't. And I think that that's, you know, that's why we have a board and we're constantly trying to talk about these things. But it's hard because on the one hand, I fundamentally believe I've given platforms to people that I disagree with all the time. And it's actually been really enriching because either I learn something new I didn't know and I connect and build a bridge, or helps me fine tune my own values and to realize I don't want that. I don't like that. But yet there are people out there whose messages are, I'm morally opposed to, I'm fundamentally opposed to, I think are dangerous. And yet it's hard because sometimes I can't act within my own values. I'm working for the organization, which is an open forum.
For sure. And the other challenge that we have, and all podcasters have to some extent, all interviewers have, is this, there's elements of the culture that wants you to be the police, that wants you to hold their feet to the fire.
Yes.
And there's two sides of that. One of the most common criticisms you get as a host of this is, why didn't you challenge them on this? Why didn't you challenge them on that? And then the flip side, which is actually worse, is people believe that whoever comes on the podcast, you are endorsing them.
Right.
And to me, that idea is a head scratcher, partly because I've done enough podcasts, and I realize I'm doing battle against this narrative. And in our podcast that you've all heard from last week, I think it was with Steven, he talks about that the problem that we have now is in the past when we had Dialogue Magazine or Sunstone Magazine, there was this progressive conversation. But it's really hard for us to maintain this progressive getting these different perspectives when people really want us to police. And it's especially when it's a division of the community. Like I recorded several years ago, and I just got a fantastic email from Ed Decker. And I just laughed through that whole podcast, partly because when I grew up, Ed Decker, you know, who's a Saints Alive, he was the Antichrist. You know, like...
Yeah, I mean, like, I still hear his name, and there's, like the hair on my arm stand up just a little bit.
But the podcast, it made me laugh because here was a man who I had seen as an enemy as a child. When I talked to him, he was warm and friendly. I disagree with just about every position he takes on Mormonism and evangelicalism and God and all that. But and what's funny is I never received any criticism for that one at all. But oftentimes the closer they are to the core values of the community, the more we're going to get sort of beat up, and people get very angry. And because we didn't ask them this question, or we didn't probe into this aspect, we didn't probe into that aspect. But as a host, that is an impossibility. As a matter of fact, if I switched and started doing gotcha stuff, where I brought them on and then halfway through I'm like, let's talk about this lawsuit, bam, then I can only do that once or twice before nobody will come on the show.
Yeah, and I think it was important when you and I first engaged this project to make sure it was within our own personal values as well. And that's why you talk about this progressive dialogue, and that's why I'm glad that we do these little check-ins from time to time. And this, what we're having this conversation is how we're feeling on this day at this time.
Right.
We're going to progress just as we have from the 6 months ago when we started this podcast. And I reserve the right to learn new things and change my mind and make mistakes and all of that. Again, I think that the challenge is the community feels so voiceless that you represent. The ex-Mormon community feels that you represented a voice that they couldn't have, right? So they want you to use that and use it in a way that would validate their pain. But the problem is you have moved on to a different space in your transition, right? And it's this juggle between holding space for that pain that needs validating. And on the other side, you know, there's a faithful narrative where they do feel persecuted by Sunstone because people do come and they print critiques of the church or critical aspects that make them feel attacked. And so how are we holding space for all of this pain and validating these narratives and allowing it? And I think within my values is always trying to make space for the pain and the impact that Mormonism has on this community writ large.
Well, my answer to that, my philosophy would be, let's talk practically. If you have a weekly podcast, you try to move it around and talk to somebody with this perspective, then talk to somebody with this perspective. But what there's a the very vocal but small minority that wants to edit, that wants to say, you can't talk to this person, you can't discuss this with this person, you can't give this person a platform. The problem is sometimes these people already have a platform. So if Sunstone cuts those folks out of the dialogue because there's a segment of the population that even legitimately doesn't want them to have a voice, then Sunstone moves away from its core mission. And it further brings up a difficult thing when in the past, like again, I've been doing this for 10 years on and off. And so you can say, like, they can say like, well, why did you talk to this person? Did you know that they were involved in a hit and run, a drunken hit and run 10 years ago? And the answer is no. And even, and that's terrible, and I'm sorry that happened, but it's kind of irrelevant to the fact that they're writing about, like, Nauvoo polygamy now.
Yeah. I would say if you were agreeing with the narrative of every guest, then that just becomes propaganda. So I think that that is the line for me, which, because, you know, Year of Polygamy, my podcast did a really good job. I thought bringing on, you know, I brought in fundamentalist prophets, and then I brought in victims of fundamentalist prophets, and tried to give platform to all of those things. And people would say, why would you give a platform to like a believing polygamous man? What they're doing is evil and wrong. And I thought, I did that. I talked with people I disagreed with all the time. And I felt like when I disagreed with them, I was able to hold them accountable in that moment, right? I wasn't agreeing with their narrative. And that's the hard thing to parse out, I think, in the Mormon system, which is loyalty versus actual faith. And agreeing versus being generous with someone in that space.
But your podcast, this is all true, and you did a fantastic job. But your podcast was Lindsay Hanson Park investigating polygamy. And part of the interesting thing about the podcast was your own journey that you went on. The difficulty that I have, and you have in dealing with me and the other podcasts, is, well, what is the valid, if I'm going to enforce a standard and saying, we're not going to talk to people who've done this or who believe this, what rubric can I possibly use? Because Sunstone's goal is to be more than one way to Mormon, but those Mormons to a group will look at the other groups and say, we don't want to deal with those.
Yeah.
There's hardly any group that we engage, except maybe the Community of Christ. They're kind of like the hippie uncle of the family. You know, they're just tired of the fight and they just want to get along and, you know, have a PBR or something. They're great. But for the most part, there's these little groups have little factions across the way. And we are in a challenge in that, do we allow, which of those groups do we allow to dictate what it is we can say, what is we can't, who we police, who we don't police, who can come on and who can't come on? And trying to come up with that kind of, those kind of rules is extremely difficult.
And I think it's even more so on the podcast, because one of the things that I think people have been most disappointed in you in is that you aren't bringing on the Ed Deckers of the world and just like dropping all the truth bombs of why the church is so awful. And it's been interesting to watch. I think that that's the biggest critique I've seen that you've received is, you know, I miss old John Larson. And I don't think that that's true at all. I think that people listen because they like your voice and your persona. But what they miss is having their pain validated externally. And that's a symptom of Mormonism. We are constantly validating each other, you know, externally all the time, in our dress, in our language, in our behavior. And so what people miss is feeling that validation. But you and I have seen how that's sort of plays into the problem, right? And so we've stopped doing that as much.
You look pretty righteous, so I'm not sure you're going to understand this simile. But most podcasts are like beer. You have to drink a lot to get that buzz. The Sunstone Magazine podcast, on the other hand, is like whiskey. Small glass, big buzz. That's because our podcast isn't about interviews, conversation, or witty banter. Rather, it presents audible quality recordings of Sunstone's best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry. Do you want to hear what the best LDS minds have to say when they say it perfectly? Then this podcast is for you. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone, and then join us for a weekly shot of the best of Mormon thought and experience. And yes, you'll be able to drive home safely afterward and get a temper recommend if you want.
Well, you're right. I do get the complaint, like you're saying, oh, I miss the old John Larson, you're not as interesting. But the bigger complaint that I get, the one where I get emails that are three pages long, are people saying, I'm not validating their experience and their pain anymore. Because what my arc, what my message has been is, yeah, I went through these phases and I went through all of them. You know, there was a time where for 2 years I was a non-believer who tried to make it work, and then you know, did the community thing and did the podcast thing. And what you're seeing now is a kind of unpredictable, because I went away for a few years and came back, and there's just certain things that just aren't interesting to me anymore. But you're seeing my own personal journey, and me saying I carried around a lot of anger and rage and outrage, which was poisonous to me personally. And I've talked to many, many friends, and many, many people been on the same journey, and they all agree that from a perspective, and I've tried to bring people on this podcast to say that from a perspective, yes, the pain and the sorrow and the churn that happens when one leaves the church or one is trying to make it work is real, but there is a valley beyond that. And this is ultimately why I like Sunstone, and our challenge here is we have to create a space that's not driven by the pain, because Mormon studies, Mormon cultural studies, Mormon history is interesting. But the polemic, the fight is not.
And the fear, I would say the fear.
And it's not, because it just never ends. It's just this never-ending battle of go read E.B. Howe's Mormonism Unveiled. You'll see some of the same arguments that have just been going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for 190 years. And it's like, okay, I got it. And yes, I've in my past broadcasting or whatever, I've dealt with a lot of the pain. I've experienced a lot of the pain. It's real. But there what I'm saying is there's a place beyond that that's more interesting, and that's where I want to engage. And it might be that the community doesn't want that.
Well, I just think a lot of the people that are in that space that you and I have sort of been in after doing this for years and years, They don't listen to these podcasts anymore, right? They go on and listen to something on NPR. And so we get people that are sort of in what I call that churning, right? Where you're grieving and you're going through all the stages of grief, and it just feels so good when you are powerless and voiceless for your whole life or for years and years, to have someone say that over the airwaves, you don't feel like you're alone. And so I think that that's important, and I don't want to denigrate that. And that's why you have your whole archive. Like, you can go listen to that John Larson. He exists on the internet. We did a conference in Kirtland, and I brought John Larson. And then I also brought Elisa Wall. And Elisa Wall is the woman who is basically responsible for putting Warren Jeffs in prison. Her case was a landmark case that was the reason Warren Jeffs got convicted. I mean, they couldn't convict him on other stuff. They got him on Elisa Wall's case. She was in the witness protection program. She has been through a lot. And I was bringing her, and I was really worried about how she would respond to her past and her identity. And I asked her to speak on reconciliation. So I have her, and then she's with someone from the Bountiful Group, a Blackmore, who comes from a different sort of type of fundamentalist community. And then we had Jeremy Tucker, who belonged to the Kingston group, and he's like an ardent atheist. And I just didn't know how we would all fit in that space. And Tom Kimball, who is lovely, gave us a little nighttime tour. And it was this amazing moment where it was nighttime and it was quiet and we were all sitting there, and it was weird. It was the closest thing. The language I have is Mormon, so I'd say it was the spirit, right? The spirit, but it was a spirit of connection between us where we all sat there, and for a moment we were all one people, like different traditions or whatever, and we all felt it. It was all there. But the difference was, in being one people or one heart, one mind or whatever, no one was asking anyone to believe that that feeling came from God, or that it didn't come from God, or that it came from this, that, or the other. We all held space and met each other where we were at. And it was such a beautiful moment, because Elisa, you know, I think she didn't quite understand what we were doing at first with Sunstone, because her identity with Mormonism, the word Mormon is so negative, you know, and people will say, why would you want to claim that label? That label hurt me. And again, I want to reiterate, we would never ask anyone to claim a label that hurts you. Don't do that. But I lost my identity when I questioned my faith. And it shouldn't have been that way, right? My faith should just be about my relationship with God. That's what Mormonism teaches. But I lost my identity. I lost my community. I lost family. I lost a lot of friends. And that cost is too high. Mormonism can still be my identity, for better or for worse. And people will always say, I think I've said this on the podcast before, but like, are you asking me to be a cafeteria Mormon? And I'm saying, no, don't pick and choose what you like. Get the whole damn plate. That's Mormonism. That's the identity we're claiming. And why not want, you know, criticism is a form of love. If you look at it, people want and believe you can be better. And I believe that about the church. I believe that our people, my ancestors, my family aren't bad people. They wanted an ideal. I think that we can have both, where we can acknowledge people's pain and we can acknowledge the harm that Mormonism has done to people and still claim it. And I think that that goes for ex-Mormons and that goes for faithful Mormons. And of course, it's the challenge when we're talking about this, we're talking in binaries, right? You're only faithful or ex-Mormon. And that's the whole point. No, we're all of those things.
I don't think we can acknowledge everybody's pain. I have to push back on that. The problem is when these collisions start happening, this goes back to what we're talking about. If you take like the polygamist men and polygamist women trying to create a space where they have victimized each other, especially the men victimizing the women, then it's really hard to get them all at the table because you have perpetrators and victims eating at the same table.
Yeah. I mean, again, though, I think you have to give compassion where you can afford it. And that's what I would say. So if you have felt victimized by certain things, you're not going to be able to afford compassion. And it sounds like that you have pain around this conversation. So you're not able to afford, because when I hear someone giving that critique, I say, oh, you represent their abuser to them, right? Something that has systemically abused. And yeah, is the way that they engage you productive or effective? No. Is it kind? No. Right. But, you know, marginalized groups have been asked to be kind to their abusers forever and ever and ever. So that's what I see that. But I haven't been hurt by that. Right. I've been hurt by other things. And so it's harder for me to do that. But I think, I mean, that's my value.
Well, I agree with that. But we need to be careful about hurt. There's an internal state of hurt. And there is also actual consequence. And those two are separate things. You know, if I am a supervisor who views the women who work for me as less than the men and systematically pays them less and teases them and marginalizes them and doesn't give them the same chance, I'm not just causing hurt. I'm causing real consequence, right?
Yeah.
Now, we can go argue, and this is one of the problems with sort of liberal philosophy in general. We can argue that maybe me as that supervisor, I was jilted by a bunch of different women or things that happened to me. So what my victimization, my perpetration is caused by my own victimhood. So yes, pain is real, but what happens when we're trying to do something concrete, like have a podcast, because we I'll tell you, every time we say, all right, well, we'll talk to this guy. Oh, that's two white guys talking together. We'll be criticized for that. All right, well, let's talk to some women of color. Oh, that'll be a white guy talking to women of color. Well, let's just have a bunch of women of color on. Oh, well, they don't represent literally we can find a criticism for any combination that we have. And if we go too far down that path, we become stymied. Our hands are cuffed and we don't know how to move forward.
I mean, I think that's why we have an open forum, because I think then it allows us to represent that. And I do think that we have a responsibility at Sunstone to try and provide platforms to those marginalized spaces. And we do. And you're right. And, you know, the one that I faced recently is some, like, women of color, for example, are done educating white people. They're just exhausted from it. They don't get anything out of it but pain. And so they don't want to come on, right? And so, but it's that same thing that we talked about with BYU, where how do we do that when we can't engage all the spaces? And right now, I guess where I've landed is we just have to do the best we can. I mean, we're doing the best we can.
Neither you or I are advocating for anybody's doing anything particularly wrong or right or whatever. We're just acknowledging the difficulty of this spot.
Yeah, and I think that part of it is we, as an open forum, we have to let the chips fall, right? when you and I and others like us have been in the space we develop, I wouldn't say a thick skin at all. It's opposite. It's like trauma. And from coming out of the church with this fragility, this privilege, and then not having any resiliency to back it up, it's, we've had to hard earn it on the internet. And so we get, it's hard for us to take criticism, right?
The problem is, if you record a podcast, you and I put ourselves into this podcast. I've listened to Sean Hannity. I have no idea who that guy is. When I listen to Lindsay Hanson Park, I get a pretty good idea of who you are. You're not real good at putting up a persona.
Right.
And that's why people connect with you. But there comes a, you know, this is true for both of us, that there comes a point when we say, why are we doing this anymore? Because if I go out there and I'm going to be subjected by a minority to what can be rather vicious personal attacks. So the question is, why engage? Why do it?
I'm going to push back on that, because I think we are asking people, we're saying we don't want to organize around your pain. Well, we can't ask people to organize around ours either.
Whenever you're in any political organization, and I don't care what it is, there gets to be jockeying and things that happen behind the scenes that can be more vicious and more troublesome and more disruptive. And so it's not as innocent as, you know, I'm on the podcast, I got to grow a thick skin because people will say mean things. It's actually much deeper than that. There's actually a huge cost that's extracted, like we've talked about, for anybody from any spectrum engaging in the middle ground. And one of I think that your goal with Sunstone's goal in general, the Mormon Ways to Mormon, is to move away from that. That to move the pain centers out of a center of our dialogue and instead establish a collective identity. Then we can orbit around that. Ex-Mormons orbit around the fact that the church is a cultish, fraudulent, terrible organization. And faithful Mormons organize around that. This is God's system and we have to protect it at all cost. And we've got to move the dialogue away from those centers.
From fundamentalism, right?
From fundamentalism. I guess at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is doing what Sunstone is trying to do, what we're trying to do with this podcast, is a lot more difficult than it sounds. This is tricky. It's really kind of easy just to poke holes in the dumb stuff the church does. That's easy. It's easy as an apologist to attack the logical gaffes and prejudices of, like, their enemies, the apostates. There's a little comic I saw, which is, hey, somebody believes something I don't believe. What should I do? And the answer is, well, find the worst possible representative of the other side and ridicule them and marginalize them and make them sound like that's what everybody else is doing. That's what we try to do. We find the worst argument, the weakest point of our enemies, and then we ridicule it. And then they do the same to us. Let's drop that polemic. Let's just have a conversation. And I'd love to do it. You know, if there's things that I can learn, which I do need to learn better to engage with, I don't know, conservatives. I'm not very good at engaging with conservatives. Sometimes the marginal experience of people of color in the church, natives, you know, like Aboriginal Americans in the church, women in the church. I don't necessarily have shared all these experiences. This is the liberal writer's dilemma. Let's say I want to write a book. There is one liberal camp that says, as a white male, I should only write about the experience of white male because I can't understand the experience of a black female. The other camp says, well, if I'm a white male who just writes about white males, I'm perpetuating the marginalization of the individual races or other experiences outside of my own. To me, I look at both of those positions and they have a valid argument. But I don't see an escape from that. And I think that's the same position that we're in. I see the argument saying, well, John just sounds like another patriarchal white male. And then I say, well, now what? Well, so what do you want me to do? Because no one ever gave me a thank you letter when I stopped talking for 5 years. I never got a single, no one ever wrote an essay about how John is the great example of advocating the rights of the patriarchy by just shutting up. That never happened. In some ways for me, and I know and others feel there's no win scenario. There's no way we can get out of the trap.
Well, and that's why I think we don't go to win, right? Like, it's not a win or a loss. It's it's having dialogue that we believe in. But you and I were talking about the challenge of that is that boring? People want controversy. We live in this age of outrage, as they call it. I mean, I think most of us are just tired now because of the political discourse that we've all had on social media. But really, that we're so used to being in that sort of state of just going to spill over my rage at this thing or this issue. I mean, even the way that we engage our news now is you just get terrible, terrible headlines. So if people come in and they talk and they say, put down this rope, are people going to want to listen to that?
What I found is this podcast that we're doing now speaks very much to a smaller group of people, but it speaks to those people. And, you know, I recognize that there'll be much fewer people who enjoy this as opposed to Mormon Expression. I wish it weren't true, but for a lot of people, they enjoy the spectacle of the Mormon fight. There's a lot of popcorn people who just like the never-ending battle and the never-ending rage and the next fighter. It's the WWF for people. And the disappointment that I am to some people is that I'm not wrestling anymore. I don't like to carry the anger. I don't like to carry the outrage. I just don't. I don't like it. So I have to actively, because I have that element in me, that anger, and I have to actively work against it.
And I actually think that that's the best that we can do to further this mission, because the whole point of More Than One Way to Mormon is for people to live authentically in their experiences. We're not asking for purity. We're not asking for perfection. We're not asking, you know, people, John Larson, to have all the answers in this. I think that part of it is about how John is engaging Mormonism right now and how his guests are engaging Mormonism. And I hope that we can continue to grow into a space where people can be comfortable allowing other people where they're at in their movement. I understand if it hurts someone else, right? If their position is hurting other people, then I think criticism is fair. But I also think that if someone doesn't believe in the church, or they believe in the church too much, or whatever it is, let's just let them have that.
I remember when I was reading a lot about PTSD a few years ago, that there's a mistake that PTSD is a function of whatever trauma happened to you. That if you didn't actually get PTSD from like witnessing a buddy get blown up in the military zone, you didn't have real PTSD. Psychologically, that's not true. It's kind of like saying, well, you got the flu really bad and you were out for 2 weeks, but the person who gave it to you only was sick for 2 days, so your flu is fake. That's not the way it works. It's not the way our minds work. What I really like about the message that you've always given, Lindsay, that you fully acknowledge the pain and suffering, but at the same time you're like, but I like to can peaches. So I think you've given us a model of saying you can acknowledge the pain and still not engage all of Mormonism as a victim. I loved going to the ex-Mormon conferences 10 years ago. They were a lot of fun. But the whole thing was, we were wronged. We are victims. There's no positive identity other than an outside. Well, now we're skeptics. Now we're smarter. Now we know more. And all that's true. But it's still a negative identity.
Well, and that's what was so brilliant being with Elisa Wall. I mean, if there's anyone that can claim like authority on trauma and pain from like, you know, Mormon abusers, it's Elisa Wall. The woman took on like the figurehead for Mormon abuse, right? Warren Jeffs. And it was just interesting to see the resiliency she's developed, her ability to hold space for all different views, and in a way that's generous to everybody involved. And it was really inspiring to me because I thought, wow, she moves away from any disempowering narrative, no matter who it is and to whom she's, you know, engaging with. And to me, that's the goal. That's the goal of healing and identity and reconciliation, that you can have your Mormon identity with generosity and generosity to the identity and to yourself. So hold space for the pain that identity caused you. Hold space for the harm that you did with that identity, and also hold space that you are good and you are beautiful and you came to this space and Mormonism was part of that, and that's okay. Can we talk
more? Like, hi, I'm Lindsay Anson Park, Executive Director of the Sunstone Education Foundation. I want to invite you to our weekly Sunstone Firesides. Do you remember those? firesides that they used to have dating all the way back to the 1930s, when the LDS Church would hold monthly meetings to discuss really important gospel topics. Those meetings became known endearingly as firesides. In January of 2019, Sunstone launched a new podcast that incorporates a nod to these firesides. Featuring a weekly evening podcast, it will display a range of hosts, all women, as they chat with diverse guests from across the Mormon spectrum. The hosts are all female identifying that represent a broad perspective in Mormonism. These podcasts will be released every Thursday evening, so you can have that fireside feel brought right into your living room. So grab a cup of cocoa or coffee, since at Sunstone there is more than one way to Mormon. Snuggle up under a blanket and listen to incredible interviews by and from incredible people. You can support women and their work in Mormon studies, which is desperately needed, by donating at sunstone.org or becoming a monthly subscriber. Go to sunstone.org and click on the podcast tab for more info. We hope you enjoy it as much as we do.
We make it sound like we get tons of negative feedback. For every piece of negative feedback we get 5, 10, 20 positive ones. And I know this Sunstone in general is reaching thousands. This podcast is reaching people who it's very meaningful for, who we have similarity in belief. So this sort of negative space should never derail this project. My hope is this project goes on forever, but I can tell you I won't be able to engage this forever, because to me it's a little bit of a sacrifice to come back here and engage these things. Like, I'll give you a visceral example. For the first 3 months we did a news and review, right? It's really hard for me to be reactive to what's going on with the church in the moment. Sometimes it's a little bit triggering. Most of the time it just doesn't speak to me. Like proof texting and following every statement that comes out of the church doesn't speak to me. It doesn't nourish me. Talking about, you know, how did the culture in San Pete County get influenced by like Nauvoo and like Copenhagen? Now that's an interesting topic. Like, how did people really engage sex, drugs, alcohol, peyote, marijuana, things that were present like in these Mormon cultures? That's an interesting question. What, you know, how do Mormons really view themselves? Not just what the church says, because oftentimes what the church says is nonsense that nobody pays any attention to.
Well, and I think you do that really well too, in that you can have a discussion about your culture and your heritage, and yet it doesn't make you fall into this. And so everything in Mormonism is forgiven and great. I mean, you do both. You get to do both. And it's more dimensional that way.
Well, and I think that's the way reality is. Nothing's ever that easy, you know. I wistfully talk about the golden age of Mormonism, which of course is an old man looking back at his youth in part. But there were terrible things at that time. It was a mix. I'm still trying to wrap my head around my mission. It was such a mix of life-changing events and things that were horrific. And I look back and say, they were doing that to me at 19. That is unconscionable. But to paint it all as a bad experience or all as a positive experience is to miss the point of life, I think.
Well, and I think to those who need those things, to those that need to hear the angry criticisms of the church, I think that there's a valid place for that. That content exists. You can go consume it. If you need to hear the church is the most true church ever and it's this, you know, beautiful, wonderful thing with no problems, that content exists. It's all there, and that's kind of the beautiful thing at Sunstone is we get to take from those things and bring them all here together. But also, do it at your own pace. I mean, John and I have, between us, probably 2 decades of collective wisdom.
Maybe
we're like a 20-year-old.
As long as you don't hold the bar too high.
And from doing this, and so where we're at is we have found now that rejecting that part of our identity completely actually was harmful to us as well.
Yes.
Embracing it completely was harmful. Rejecting it completely was harmful. And so we are finding bits and pieces and building ourselves back up into a wholeness, right? We're not going to be amputated and cut off part of our identity. It's going to be this, we're striving for wholeness, right? And that's what we're trying to do here. That's what we're trying to do with this podcast, I think.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And again, when we started out, I don't know for sure that it would come out that way, but it's who I am. It's where I am. And the fact that we're getting criticism from both sides of being too mamby-pamby and too direct probably means we're close to the right place, you know?
Yeah, and I think, again, if you want to hear your opinion validated, there's content for that. If you want to hear what the conversations are that are happening, even if you don't agree with them, at least you know what the conversations are, right? There's always a common ground, I think, that you can understand why you can engage someone else's point of view that you disagree with. And Sunstone is an invitation to practice that sometimes.
For sure. And if you represent, dear listener, a marginalized perspective that doesn't get its due shake, we want to talk to you. We would love to have you on. We would love to have you present at the Sunstone Conference. We want to hear that. That's what we look for, is diversity in opinion and authenticity. So that we're not having another white guy pontificate about the experience of, you know, Aboriginal Americans in the church. We want people who lived it.
And I just want to throw this out there. If you are a marginalized group, person of color in the transgender community, a native voice, you know, someone who's been directly harmed by Mormonism, we have a scholarship where we try to, you know, use our funds to make it available, make this platform available to you. So it's not something that, you know, we're trying to make up for the barriers that might prohibit you from speaking on this platform and compensate you for your time. I wish we could do that with everyone, but we can't, unless, you know, people want to support these efforts.
Give. People should give a little bit to help these things out. So I think the podcast has been an interesting project. I think we're still going on. We're still trying to discover what it is we want to be. We're trying to transition basically a group or an organization that was about a print journal. And again, I'll refer you to Stephen's podcast from last week to hear about that journey and why that's difficult and why it's rewarding. And we're trying to figure out how to engage new media, knowing that oftentimes the new media, things like podcasts and Facebook and Twitter, can be very toxic and can push the worst behaviors. We're trying to figure out. We don't know exactly what the right answer is.
But you're invited to help us.
And what I like about our friendship, Lindsay, is it survives whatever difference of opinion we have.
Yeah.
And I've seen over the years that our opinions have changed, sometimes swapped.
You know, the podcast can be that for you, the conferences can be that for you. But again, Sunstone is a community. It's not John, it's not Lindsay, it's not our staff, although that's who keeps it alive. And I'm grateful for that. But it's a community. So we invite all of, you know, if you have something interesting to say, if you have a viewpoint that's not being represented in Mormonism, contact us. And to circle back to the faith politics at the beginning of the podcast, if you want to see Sunstone represent more voices, then you have to help us. We can't do that alone. Institutionally, there are barriers that depend on Sunstone being fringe, so they don't have to be. And that gives us a power, but it also limits us in our platform. And so if you think Sunstone is this, that, or the other, then you got to help us out.
You know, we have 4 podcasts. I would love it if Sunstone had 20, 25 podcasts, 30 podcasts.
Well, and I will say that what people don't know is that bringing you on brought in funding that has been able to fund other projects for marginalized voices.
If everybody wanted me to, I could record 2 podcasts. I could record the one where I interview somebody and then do another hour where I go through and tell everything I disagreed with them on. But that's not interesting. No one would want to listen to that, especially not me.
I'm sure people would want to listen to that. But we're not doing it.
No, nor do we rate like the conference and say, this is Sunstone stars. You are a 5 Sunstone presentation because you match our values.
And like I said, listening doesn't mean agreeing. No. Listening just means hearing and trying to understand why people would believe what they believe. And that's the gift that we have here, is we get to understand our Mormonism as an outsider sometimes. And I think that's really beautiful.
I guess the bottom takeaway is there's probably more thought and tears and conversations and worry and concern and anxiety that goes into something like this podcast than it may come across on the air.
Yeah, and we appreciate all the people that have had faith in it or who have donated to it, because like I said, it's not just funding this project, it's carrying all of our projects. And that means a lot to a lot of people.
Thanks again, Lindsay. Thanks for this opportunity. Lindsay does a fantastic job with the Sunstone. And you, dear listener out there, will not know how much of her time and her soul and her energy and her heart goes into all this. Lindsay is truly an empathetic person. And when we talk about her loving all these different people and all the different voices, it's absolutely true. So, Lindsay, thanks for letting me be in your orbit.
Oh, thanks, friend.